This is the PDH online audio course on electrical specification, session 4 of 11, why construction specifications and why standards for construction specifications. This part of the course is separated into sections which speak generally about specifications. Separate PDH online courses are offered for individual specifications, but examples are offered here from published construction specifications. If you're seeking immediate value and answers to quiz questions so you can renew your license, please go to the list of rules without delay. If your learning style requires that you understand what is going on behind the curtain, then please read the following explanatory narratives, and I'll read it for you if you're interested in that. Construction specifications exist for a number of reasons. For the designer to communicate to the constructor, to permit the owner and construction manager to verify what they are paying for and what they hope to get, to help determine which components are in the base bid and which are extras, to help the judge or arbitrator decide if screw-ups were the designer's fault. Each of these situations has happened around me many times. You may not share these experiences, so I'll relate some anecdotes. However, we are talking about $10,000, $100,000, or $1 million and beyond in consequences. Use this course as a guide for initiating discussions with your boss or project leader. Do not take any material here as bona fide engineering or legal advice. The designer is responsible for design intent. The constructor is responsible for means and methods. If the designer has a valve spec which states locate supply and return isolation valves for each plumbing device in a readily accessible location, then the constructor knows that they are required and he chooses the locations. Any awkward locations which require rework are at the constructor's expense. If the designer, however, has a valve spec which states locate supply and return isolation valves for each plumbing device as shown on the drawings, then any awkward locations result in extended discussion as to whether or not the constructor was following the drawings. Any isolation valves that were missed are clearly project extra costs, not in the bid documents or materials takeoffs. The owner wants a first-class, but not gold-plated job. Most of the visible key details are discussed and documented. Electrical details usually are not discussed. Wiring can use copper or aluminum conductors. Raceways can be heavy rigid steel, intermediate rigid steel, steel tubing, aluminum flex, plastic, and in some cases plastic jacketed conductors without raceways. Jobs have gone to bid without a clear statement on the raceways required. Many jobs require different raceway constructions in different areas. Very careful words are required for communication and agreement of all parties. For several years, data jack devices were a problem. The electrical designer and the electrical contractor put in empty conduits and empty boxes. The data or communications designer and contractor pulled the wires, terminated the wires to jack devices, and installed a cover plate. For unknown reasons, the jack devices slipped through the cracks. They were unavailable in a wide range. They were available in a wide range of styles, but nothing gets supplied unless it's called out on the drawings or in the specs. Today, I know of several projects that call for wire tags and conduit tags, but do not call out the type, size, manufacturer, model number. I did quality assurance review and noted the deficiency, but no one followed up. It may not be noticed until the drop ceilings are in place and all the equipment is buttoned up. I think we paid for the tags, but no one's going to install them for free at the end of the project. I have not been deposed or appeared in court in my 30 years of electrical design. I consider this good fortune for me and my projects. On the other hand, I do make mistakes. I issue specifications with typo. I hope I do that fewer times now than I did when I started out, but they still exist. Let me tell you what I heard over the cubicle walls. An engineer specified a 12208 replacement elevator. During installation, the contractor noted that all building power was 12240. This is a spec error and should be a liability to the design firm. By the grace of the fates, the VFD supplied was dual rated, 12208 three-phase or 12240 one-phase. This dual rating did not show up in any of the invoicing, but was clear on the nameplate and instructions. a design manager mandated that all future constructions drawings state that the constructor is responsible for verifying system voltage and ratings of materials being provided. This is a spec problem with a spec solution, but I would have preferred more care during the design and total avoidance of the discrepancy. The voltage problem showed up on another project involving HVAC electric reheat terminals. The manufacturer would not build the unit in the required voltage. It was not a standard catalog item. He wasn't willing to do a special. No one noticed the discrepancy between the HVAC and electrical designs. A lot of negotiation resulted in the addition of a number of transformers. I believe the design firm contributed funds to the transformer's purchase. Warning, no one reads specification. We're continuing with explanatory narrative. We're not calling this factual, but more opinion. Everyone in the design and construction trade wants to build another unit just like the last one. If the last one required steel tubing to protect electrical conductors, you can say heavy wall rigid steel many times and they still think tubing. They will price tubing and they will install tubing if no one stops them. I have seen this situation result in $10,000 or many times $10,000 in cost increases. And I've seen the tubing installed. Everyone smiled, including a very conscientious construction manager, and just walked away. This is one of the big differences between bid documents and as-built documents. Today, however, there are no such things as as-built documents, only endorsed checks for the service. Now, obviously, this discussion was of extreme cases, but they're real cases, and they are repeated often. If no one reads the specifications, why do we invest so much effort in writing, distributing, and revising them? A big part is that there are conscientious inspectors, construction managers, and constructors. A good estimator prices heavy, rigid steel when you ask for it. A good engineer rejects submittals for thin wall tubing where rigid steel was specified. An honest contractor who lowballs the job by not reading the spec eats the cost when the spec is clear. A very big part of this is the role of various inspectors. No one wants to go on record approving reduction in the quality of a project. Everyone involved may agree that they would be just as happy with less, but no one will sign off in those words. Sometimes intense effort is invested to change the investor's report to also overlook the problem. I have a friend who left a good concrete testing job because of the stress of exactly this situation. What about owner specs, specification services, proprietary specs, and creating your own specifications? Well, for 20 of my 30 years, I thought everyone was smarter than I was. I used my employer specifications. I used very old master specs. Master spec is a brand name of construction specifications from CSI sold by Arcom. I used vendor specs. It was before the internet, and I had not encountered government public domain construction specs. Today I use whatever source I'm told to use, but I edit a lot. I include parts that relate to the current job and make it better. I delete parts that do not relate to the current job or damage the quality of the result. Today I add a few sections routinely. These will be discussed in detail later. Owner specs, that is, provided by the end user, are usually bad and sometimes very, very bad. One firm required a cast iron safety switch, which had been replaced by a micro switch 10 years previously. We mentioned it each time we got a job, and then we did exactly what the owner told us. The manufacturer would schedule a special production run to make these cast safety switches. Unfortunately, the owner went out of business. The problem is that construction technology changes. In the 3 years between each issue of the National Electric Code, many new sections describe approved methods. Each of these meets a need and provides economies to the contractor and to the owners. Owners' specifications and old copies of master spec will not include these innovations. I have very strong bad feelings about using vendor specs. This is where the person who sells you the product tells you how to specify the product and just incidentally includes features that only his product provides, and his brand name is the only acceptable supplier. I work with some manufacturers' representatives who are the best engineers, truly skilled, experienced professional engineers. They get repeat business by providing the right materials and services at competitive prices. I also work with some manufacturers' representatives who are recent business graduates and cannot pronounce the words in the glossy literature. Who's going to answer to the owner, to the judge, if a bad spec results in an improper application and someone dies? If my name and seal are on the design, I want to think the requirements were correct, not just trust in a salesman or a parent firm of the salesman that the design was correct. What is critical in spec writing and editing? Really and truly, your best chance of communicating is in the first paragraph. Say heavy, rigid steel conduit or addressable analog photoelectric smoke detectors. It really belongs in Part 2 products, but they will read it in the introduction, and no one can complain that the requirement was hidden in fine print. This concludes Session 4. Please join me for Session 5, The Origin of CSI Construction Specifications.